A deep, hoarse, almost sound of protest swept through the congregation. It was bone deep, filled with pain. And yet, no one listening to him found the words to give that protest shape and form. No one cried out in rejection. And that failure, the fact that the protest was inchoate, unformed, a cry of grief, not one of denial, told Timon Hoskins a great deal about the sheep of his flock. Tears burned behind his eyes as he felt the conflicting tides sweeping through his congregation's hearts. As he recognized their sorrow, the fear not simply of what he had already laid out before them, but of what they sensed was yet to come, and the soul-deep dread which was the precursor of acceptance. "I am not the only one of Mother Church's priests who has longed to cry out against her oppression," he told them. "Not the only one of her loving children whose eyes have seen the corruption growing and festering at her very heart. There are more of us than you may ever have guessed, and yet we have been ordered to keep silence. To tell no one we've seen the blemishes growing, the chimney of her lamp begrimed. To pretend we haven't seen worldly power, wealth, and the pomp and secular glory of princes become more important to those charged to keep her safe and clean of spot than their own duty to God and to the archangels." His voice rose, gaining steadily in power, touched with the denunciatory power of the visionary, and his dark eyes flashed. "We have been ordered, I have been ordered, to keep silent about all these things, yet I will keep silent no more. I will open my mouth, and I will tell you, yes, yes. My children, I have seen all of those things, and my eyes, made sharp by sorrow and disappointment, have grown disillusioned. I have seen the evil hiding behind the fairness of Mother Church's surface. I have seen the men called to the orange who have turned their backs upon God's true message, given their hearts not to God, but to their own power and ambition. I have seen her captivity, and heard her cries for succor, and grieved for her bondage in the dark hours of the night, as have others. And our hearts are heavy as stones, for if she can give harbor to corruption, then surely anything can. If she is not proof against evil, then surely nothing is, and there is no hope in us. No help for us, for we have failed the holy Bedard's great charge, and God's own church has been defiled. Mother Church herself has become the doorway of evil, the portal for Shan Wei's dark poison of the soul, and we, my children, are the ones who have let that terrible, terrible transformation come to pass. By our silence, by our acceptance, by our cowardice, we have become the accomplices of her defilers. And do not doubt for one moment that at the end of all things, we shall be called to account for our most grievous faults. And yet..." His voice trailed off into stillness, and he let that stillness linger. Let it build and hang heavily, filling St. Catherine's like some throbbing thunderhead, pregnant with the very rackery of God. And then, at last, after a tiny eternity, he spoke again. "Oh yes, my children, and yet, the great and yet, the glorious and yet, because God has sent us hope once more after all, sent it in the most unlikely guise of all, in the words of the apostate, in the division of the schismatic, and in the teachings of the heretic. I know how shocked many of you must be to hear that, how dismayed, how frightened. And yet, as I examine the doctrine of this Church of Charis, I find no evil in it. I find anger. I find rebellion. I find denunciation and defiance. But none of that, my children, none of it do I find directed against God, or against the writ, or against what Mother Church was ordained to be, and, with God's help, will one day be again. I do not say the Empire of Carus came to our shores solely out of the love all children of God are called to share with one another. I will not tell you worldly ambition, the contest of princes squabbling over baubles, and the illusion of power has played no part in what has happened here, or in what happened in Darkos Sound, when the corrupt men in Zion sent our sons and brothers to destroy those who had dared to reject their own corruption. Men are men. They are mortal, fallible, imperfect, prey to ambition and to the hatreds of this world. They are all of that. Yet even so, they live in God's world, and God can and will use even their weaknesses for His great purpose. And as I look upon His world, as I meditate upon His word, again the hands gently caressed the great book before him, I see him doing precisely that. I tell you now, and no foreign heretic has put the words into my mouth, what the Church of Carus tells you about the corruption, the decadence, the evil of the group of four, and those who serve their will, is God's own truth, carried to us in the tempest of war, because God's Church would not hear him in the time of tranquility. The men in Zion, the men who think of themselves as the masters of God's Church, are not shepherds, but wolves. They serve not the light, but the deepest, blackest dark. And they are not the keepers of men's souls, but the enemies of God himself, set free to wreak Shanwei's ruin upon us all, unless those who do serve the light stop them and cast them down utterly. God's sword has been loosed in the world, my children. We are fated to live in the shadow of that sword, and it is up to each of us to decide where we will stand when his truth demands an accounting of us. That choice lies before each and every one of us. We ignore it at our peril, for those who do not choose to stand for the light will find themselves in the fullness of time given to the dark. I beseech you, as you face this time of tumult, choose, choose. Take your stand for God as God gives you the power to see it, and gird yourself for the greater and still sterner test to come.